All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio. This is Veterans Radio. And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, CW2 type helicopter pilot in Vietnam in 1969. Welcome to our program. We're going to be talking a lot about music this afternoon. So we've got representatives of Operation Song down in Nashville. And also we've got the representatives from the Warrior Songs up in Wisconsin. So I'm pretty excited about that. I think you'll be interested in hearing those songs. Both organizations take the veterans' stories and turn them into songs. However, the Warrior Songs is going to be Doug Bradley, and Doug is a writer as well as a songwriter, and he has written a book about the music of Vietnam. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that later on, about the music of Vietnam 50 years later. So I'll make sure you stick around for that. I think you'll find that most interesting. We also have an interview with a local organization. You know, we talk about these different veterans, they're not really charities, but these are operations that, you know, veterans get together and they're trying to, you know, save the history of whatever it happens to be. In this case, this organization is called Warbirds of Glory. And the Warbirds of Glory is located up in New Hudson, South Lyon, Michigan. And they are trying to rebuild a B-25 bomber that they discovered up in Alaska that had crashed and had been sitting out in the middle of nowhere for about 50 years until someone discovered it, and they have brought it back, and they're trying to rebuild it. So that's going to be coming up in just a moment. Before we get into all of our stories, I want to make sure that we thank our sponsors, and that would be Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans specializes in veterans' disability claims. So give them a call at 800-693-4800. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, they are the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses. For more information, you can go to their website, that's nvbdc.org, or give them a call at 888-237-8433. The Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. For more information about the Charles Kettles VA Medical Center, go to va.gov/Ann Arbor Healthcare. All right, we're going to get right into the program because we're packed in this afternoon. So right now I want to go to the interview that I did the other day with Patrick Mihalik, and Patrick is the founder of Warbirds of Glory, and we talked. So here we go. Here's Patrick and the Warbirds. We're here on Veterans Radio, and we are talking with Patrick Mihalik, who is one of the founders of an organization called Warbirds of Glory. And as we were talking just a little bit earlier, it's one of these gems of a veterans organization that is attempting to spread the word about veterans just in general. And what they are trying to do is to rebuild a B-25 bomber, which is kind of awesome when I think about it. So here we are right now, and I want to introduce everybody to Patrick Mihalik. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
All right, so tell me a little bit more about this organization, Warbirds of Glory. How did you get started?
So this actually started when I was a young child, and for some reason, I always took a love, you know, growing up with my grandfather, who was a machinist mate during World War II, basically, you know, being in the shop and watching, you know, Discovery Channel's Wings, for some reason, I took a love for a B-25, and I actually was drawing pictures of a twin-engine, twin-tailed bomber before I knew what even a B-25 was. And so all through my, you know, teens, building plastic models of B-25s and building RC airplanes of B-25s, I started collecting bits and pieces here and there. And then finally, when I was in college at Western Michigan University to get my bachelor's in aviation maintenance technology, I spent a lot of time researching wrecks basically around the world. And one wreck that really caught my interest was this B-25 that was basically never made it over for combat, and but it was basically used here in the States as a bomber trainer. And then in the late 50s, it was sold war surplus to a company out of Missoula, Montana called Johnson Flying Service that modified it for fire suppression bombing. And it served in Montana for all the way in the early 60s before it was moved up to Alaska. And basically June 27th of 1969, it suffered a double engine failure on takeoff due to fuel contamination. And the pilot, Herman McGallagher, successfully landed it on this tiny sandbar in the middle of the Tananaw River. And basically they came out there, and at the time in the 60s, you could still get a B-25 airframe pretty reasonable. So they went out there, pulled the instruments, pulled the engines off of it, and basically abandoned the airframe. And that just, you know, sparked so much interest that after college, sadly, you know, all over the years, people went out there and vandalized it. They shot at it. They cut parts off of it for souvenirs, leaving primarily an intact B-25 center section and a bunch of other pieces that were sadly cut. And so in 2012, there was another B-25 that same kind of situation, was sold war surplus, but it actually went over the Royal Canadian Air Force and was used over there by them and then for photo mapping before coming back to the States. And it changed hands multiple times before it ended up on a pole above a water park down in Florida.
Oh, geez.
And that airplane actually went through like three hurricanes and suffered so much bad corrosion it was deemed unsafe, and they ended up taking it down, and then it ended up winding up through a court-ordered auction being sold as parts. And so when I found out about that, it had a good forward fuselage, and I actually found this ad for this thing on eBay of all places. So I literally called the guy and explained to him what I wanted to do, that I wanted to start a nonprofit. I wanted to rebuild the B-25 and, see if he could help. And basically he gave me, after about the seventh day calling him, he gave me 2 weeks to come up with the money. So I sold my car. I basically sold everything I had that wasn't of true value to me to be able to buy that front section of airplane. So I went and down there, and, lo and behold, on the way down there, my friend and I, we stopped at the Kalamazoo Air Zoo, and at the time I didn't have much of drawings. I had the manuals, but we needed to make sure that this forward section of the B-25 would fit on the trailer we had. And as we were leaving the gift shop, there was the stack of old used magazines, and the very top magazine was a 1992 Warbirds International magazine. And on that cover, it said The Mystery of the Sandbar Mitchell. And I looked at my friend. I said, this isn't sign. I don't know what is.
Oh, my.
And so we got that magazine. We got down to Oklahoma. And, you know, lo and behold, there's this forward fuselage of a B-25. And I'm just, you know, beyond excited because I knew this was the start of the mission to be able to bring this airplane back to life. And then at that point in time, the gentleman that had the parts surprised me with not only the forward fuselage, but the rear fuselage was there, and there was a bunch of other stuff. So now I knew I had a really good shot at trying to get the ownership and salvage rights of what was left up there in Alaska. So then at that point in time, I wrote a letter to the Thors Rudds, who was the last registered owner of the B-25. And sadly, Edgar had since passed, but the airplane was still registered, but it was still listed with the FAA, but it was actually expired registration, so it was never deregistered. And so telling my story was compelling enough to the Thors Rudds that they came back and said that they believe that that would be their dad's wish, because over the years people tried getting it for parts or just wanted the data plate and registration. And they basically ended up selling me the airplane for $1. So at that point in time, now we had a valid FAA serial number data plate. We had, you know, basically the ownership of that airplane. But now the big problem was we had to get the actual salvage rights, because technically it was considered abandoned in the state of Alaska. So at that point in time, we started working with, because where the airplane was on this tiny sandbar, it was actually in Fort Wainwright's military property, by it's actually south of their gunnery range. So work with the base commander. I mean, they were more than happy for us to come out there and retrieve the airplane. But now at this point in time, come to find out, a little tiny sandbar actually is a deeded piece of land, and it was in turmoil who actually owned that piece of land, because it got turned over to the state of Alaska. So at that point in time, we had to, you know, not only work with the base commander, the Bureau of Land Management, we had to now work with the DNR and the state of Alaska, the state's historical preservation office, to go through all, everything, you know, fish and game. We had to worry about migratory birds, all this stuff. And then in 6 months' time, Not only do we navigate through all the hoops, get the actual permits from the state of Alaska, salvage rights from the state of Alaska, we then had to go ahead and we had to raise the money. And at the time, you know, I was doing this on, once again, what we call the ramen noodle budget, right, where, you know, it was basically I was funding everything with the money from selling my car and everything else. And we ended up at the time, crowdfunding was kind of a new thing. And there was a thing called Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And it was basically to raise money for upcoming, you know, projects and new businesses and that kind of stuff. And we submitted basically saying what we wanted to do. Kickstarter didn't know what to do because they never had this, anything like this before. And they went ahead and they let it run. And in about 30 days, we raised nearly $30,000. From people all around the world that believed in my story and what we wanted to do. Then we went ahead, we formed a recovery team, and, you know, we ended up raising money from the recovery team itself because we got, you know, Alaskan Airlines, University of Alaska Fairbanks, they all worked with us to, you know, get the cost down because everybody on the team originally was going to go out and buy their own airline tickets, buy their own housing, all the stuff. And, you know, people are going to spend $7,000 to $8,000 doing it. And we're like, well, for $5,000, you can come through us directly. And then that helped raise the funds necessary to bring the airplane home. And, July 5th of, 2013 is when we actually airlifted. And that's a whole nother story there. Airlifted the center section of the B-25 off the sandbar. All the other parts were removed by riverboat. And then by the 14th of July, it was back here in Michigan, and we were able to start actually working on the aircraft.
Well, this is an amazing story, and I want our listeners to know that they can go to the website, warbirdsofglory.org, and all of this is documented with pictures and stories and YouTubes and so on and so forth. And it just shows the passion that you obviously have for aviation and for the history of the whole thing.
Absolutely. And there's actually a television series called The Restorers. Now, it aired on PBS here in the States. It was in the History Channel everywhere else around the world. But episode 2 actually is the recovery of our airplane. Okay. And I know you can, you know, we do sell the DVD and Blu-ray of the series through our museum's web store. And I think I'm pretty sure on Amazon they have it on there where you can, you know, buy, I think for $2.99, buy that episode. But it's, you know, it's a remarkable journey of us getting this thing. And one of the things too is Logan Kucharik at the time, he was our youngest recovery member. He was 15 years old. And Logan was basically considered student number one that started coming to the hangar when he was 13 and started working on airplanes with us. And then eventually, you know, became a big part of the museum because Logan's, you know, he was a part of a history club. And through that history club, you know, he was telling, you know, a lot of the other students that, hey, you know, I'm being a part of this. I'm help working on this airplane. Today now, we've had over 45 kids come in here that actually are working on restoring the B-25 flying condition, and they're learning and appreciating the history, what the symbol of this airplane represents. And they're learning everything from, you know, general the aviation maintenance, but most importantly, you know, shop discipline, etiquette, CAD CAM, CNC operation, metal forming, all that kind of stuff. And a lot of the students that come through end up either going into the armed services or they end up going into a field of aviation, either engineering or maintenance. And some of them even gone off to be, airline pilots.
This is just an awesome story, Patrick. And I really want us, our audience, to know that this is available. And it is up. It's in Brighton. And
we are now in New Hudson, Michigan. So,
oh, okay.
So what happened? I mean, basically, when we started this, it was in Brighton. We were based at the Brighton Airport. And it was a small little residential airport. It was actually the airport I grew up on. I actually still live on the airport. But, you know, we had a dear friend on the airport that basically opened his hangar home to us. And it was a 40 by 60 hangar that we operated out for 10 years. Built, because once again, you know, we were on a ramen noodle budget. You know, most nonprofits have a benefactor that really starts and fund them. And we didn't have that. It was basically, we had a dream, we had the desire, and we started doing it. But the problem that we ran into being at the Brighton Airport was we were so limited on what we can do because of it being residential from the township. So we couldn't have big fundraising events. We couldn't have, you know, a lot of times we would you know, write for grants. But as soon as they would see that, I mean, we're a 501c3, but as soon as they would see that we're connected, that our business address is a home address, you know, a lot of times the stuff would get put aside and it would kind of, you know, diminish what we were doing with the students and veterans and everything else. And then finally, we literally survived by selling T-shirts and going to air shows and letting people hear our story and, 100% donated, you know, donations funded. And finally, we were able the last 10 years to build enough repertoire with the public through the air show community to be able to get enough supporters and backers to help with us saving the money. And finally, the next county over from us, Oakland County, in New Hudson, it's actually the Oakland Southwest Airport, which is a commercial airport. And, you know, another one of these, it was like, you know, a guiding light along the way with everything that has got us where we're at. And there was a gentleman that had a Cessna 172 that needed an instrument panel made for it. And he approached the museum and said, hey, would the students be interested in CNC cutting the panel for me out? And we said, sure, absolutely, for a donation. And basically we went to go visit his airplane, which happened to be at this Oakland Southwest Airport. And lo and behold, they had basically this massive hangar that was vacant for 15 years. And I mean, it's, you know, 65 by 90 with another, you know, pretty much 40 by 90, 8,500 square foot, of space. And, once the township, learned about really what we're doing, they jumped on board and wanted to get us here and did everything they could. And basically we moved the museum from Brighton to New Hudson here, August of last year. And we finally, for the last 2 months now, are actually back up and running, working on the airplane now.
That's great, Patrick. This is such an exciting story, and there's so much more that's involved with it that unfortunately we don't have time to go into today. But I really encourage our audience to go to their website, warbirdsofglory.org. The whole thing is there, and make a donation. You know, and follow them around. You get to see where they go. They've got a newsletter that goes out. They have a little store where you can buy T-shirts and everything else, anything that they can use to fund their organization. I think it's just a great opportunity for all of us here in Southeast Michigan, and that's it. This is one of those gems that is out there, and I know we're going to be talking it up with the people that we know that, you know, like to give grants out to veterans organizations and see what we can do to help you out.
Hey, I greatly appreciate it. You know, I'd love to come back on and talk some more because there's a whole other story about how we are actually restoring this airplane to represent and honor a crew that was lost over Italy. So I would love to come back and talk about that because it's a really, you know, neat story. And last but not least, May 13th is going to be our fly-in open house here at the airport. So we actually are going to be having the hangar open to the public where you can come in and see the B-25 and you meet some of the students and volunteers and even learn about how you can get involved with volunteering and, helping with the project. And, we even need, docents to be able to give tours and that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of ways you can kind of help. And, as you mentioned about donation, but I think it's to become a museum member. It's $35 a year for the basic membership, and that does get you our museum newsletter and updates, on events and that kind of stuff. We have, like, member events where it's members only and that kind of stuff. So
Awesome. Well, great. Thank you very much, Patrick Mihalik, founder of the Warbirds of Glory. And, let's get you back on here in May just before your big event, and we'll promote it.
Sounds fantastic.
All right. Thank you very much, Patrick.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, I'm still here. Just got to turn on my microphone. There we go. All right. That was Patrick Mihalik from the warbirdsofglory.org. Well, you want to talk about dedication. Wait till you see the pictures. You've got to go to the website and see this thing. It's like it's started off as a big pile of rusty parts and so forth. And, they've got the nose all pretty much all done, and they're working on the tail, and then they're going to kind of connect the two. So it's mind boggling to me that they're trying to put this together, because in their donation page, they're looking for people to donate like a dime for a rivet or, for screws or nuts and bolts and so forth. So, they need your help. And this is a really big project that they're attempting to do out there at the Oakland Airport. And so I encourage you, all the people here around down here in Southeast Michigan, you know, you can take a ride out there. It's just off of Pontiac Trail and I think Grand River. And you're going to have this big open house coming up in May. So it's May 13th. So I would encourage you to go out. They need your assistance. It's a worthwhile cause because there aren't that many of these B-25s left in the world. And these were, you know, one of those workhorses of World War II. excuse me. I'm waiting for a phone call to come in, but it hasn't come in yet. So we are going to take a real quick break and play our Medal of Honor right now. And then I'll give Derek the phone number and see if we can reach our next guest. So stick around. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Major Bernard Fisher's wingman was shot down and the North Vietnamese were closing in on him. Fisher radioed to the other aircraft, "I'm going in." Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
A Special Forces camp in Oshawa Valley was on the verge of being overrun. Fisher and five other aircraft flew in at 300 feet to deliver their ordnance. Then they turned and went in for a strafing run when his wingman, Major Jump Myers, was hit. Myers crash-landed on the camp's airstrip and hid in the underbrush. Strafing around Myers, Fisher called for a helicopter rescue. When he heard the choppers were at least a half hour away, Fisher decided to go in. His first try was aborted when he was going too fast to stop. On his second try, Fisher brought his A1E to a stop, turned it around, and taxied to where Myers was hiding. Myers rushed out, climbed onto the wing, and Fisher pulled him into the cockpit. Then Fisher pushed forward on the throttle and started his takeoff run. With heavy fire from both sides, he managed to get enough airspeed to take off. Upon returning to Pleiku, his ground crew counted 19 holes in his aircraft. President Lyndon Johnson presented him the Medal of Honor on January 19, 1967.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Hi, I'm Gary Sinise. Our veterans put everything on the line to protect our freedom. We may never be able to repay them for their sacrifice, but we can show them just how much we appreciate all they've done. You can help by simply sharing your time, lending a warm smile, a supportive hand, or a sympathetic ear to someone who needs it. Everyone can do something to make veterans know just how much we appreciate their service. Please visit www.volunteer.va.gov. What will you do?
And we're back here on Veterans Radio, and that's a song from a long, long time ago in a country far, far away. Joining me right now on the line is Dominic Sansone, and Dominic has a song that he had written with Operation Song. And remember, we had talked with them numerous times over the last couple of years because of what they're doing. It's a great program. They take veteran stories and they turn them into songs. So as I mentioned on the line is Dominic. So Dominic, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. Hey, listen, tell me how you got involved with Operation Song.
So I got involved with Operation Song through my workplace, Travelers Insurance Company.
Okay.
And they have a group called Military Veterans and Advocates Network where people join. It's like a diversity group at most places. And they sent out a call for volunteers, and me and some of my buddies decided to give it a shot. And that's how we got there.
So was this a retreat? I read something about it being a travelers insurance retreat where you met with the Operation Song people and they kind of paired you up with a songwriter and off you went.
Yeah, they used to do the in-person retreats, but then after COVID, they started doing them with Zoom.
Okay.
So we got to do it over Zoom, but retreat enough. And obviously, so, retreat's not really in my phrase book anyway. So.
Well, I know. not the right term to use, I would think, for military people. Tell us a little bit about your background as far as your military service was concerned.
So I joined the military in between my junior and senior year of high school. And then I was enlisted. I was a paratrooper at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, doing airborne artillery, just loving it, having a great time. And then decided to get out because I knew everything and had a break in service, and then found a recruiter and was talking to me about how I needed to go to college and get that going for, you know, being a productive adult. And 21 years later, I retired as a lieutenant colonel in the United States Army. It's pretty awesome. Medically retired from the injury sustained in combat in Afghanistan.
I think we've just been joined by your cohort.
Yeah, it says I'm muted.
Well, that's to turn his microphone. I think that's Pete, looks like. Pete Salas, who was the songwriter, with you. So they're working on unmuting his microphone. All this technology drives us all crazy. So,
sure.
when were you in the service?
I was in, I got adjusted data service because of my break from 1996. To 2016.
Okay. All right. So as I said, joining us in our Zoom room right now is the writer of the song. That's Pete Salas. Pete, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hey, Pete.
I'm not sure if you can hear me right now.
Either way, Pete's pretty awesome.
It doesn't look like you can hear me. All right. So let's talk about your song then. The song is... The song is awesome. It's called 1353.05. What does that mean?
So that was the exact time frame, exact time and date on, well, not date, on April 15th, when a Haqqani fighter cell drove a Toyota Hilux pickup truck into my wall with 500 pounds of explosives and started an ambush. And The firefight was pretty intense, burned down most of the FOB in Afghanistan. And when it was all said and done, I didn't lose any of my people, and the bad guys, not so much. But that refers to the time. It was 1353 and 5 seconds exactly when the detonation went off.
Oh, okay. And this song has been tied in with the changing of the guard at Arlington.
Oh, how really?
That connection there?
I didn't know about that.
Well, I always like to surprise my guests. well, when I went to the Operation Song site and I clicked on your song, it came up with the changing of the changing of the guard at Arlington, which is obviously not related at all to this thing. Why don't we tell me a little bit about the song now? Because we know that this is a result of this incident that occurred. And let's play the song, and then we can come back and talk about it a little bit more. And maybe we can get Pete all set up so he can talk to us. All righty?
Cool. Yeah.
Okay, Derek, cue it up, and here we go.
Woke up that morning to a sunrise cow call. Four tangos blew up a homemade wall. A V-bid bomb started a long firefight. 15 Purple Hearts and 55 soldiers survived. The bullets flying, fires light. 18-year-olds shooting M4 guns. No forgetting, no regretting the innocence I lost from that fight we won. That's the minute I learned the meaning of sacrifice. 1353-05. 5. I signed up to fight to get a combat patch, but I'd be okay if I had to give it back. They say war is hell, but really it's much worse, 'cause there's no happy ending in that chapter and verse. When there's bullets flying, fire's lighting, scared 18-year-olds shooting M4 guns, no forgetting. Since I lost from that fight we won, that's the minute I learned the meaning of sacrifice. 1353-05. In a 15-minute firefight lasts a lifetime for me. Yeah, I'm trying, I'm surviving, and I'll never quit until the mission's done. No forgetting. Since I lost from that fight we won, that's the minute I learned the meaning of sacrifice. 1353-05. Yeah. Forever burned in my mind. 1353-05.
Wow, that is a great song. That is really a great song. I'm just wondering if Pete can hear. Pete, can you hear us? He's just watching. One of the problems with Zoom sometimes. Okay. So tell me about working with Pete then. You know, how did that come together? You said it was all done on Zoom. That's even more amazing to me.
Yeah, we spent several hours together on Zoom, and I mean, I didn't know anything about the process or really what Operation Song did, but getting to know Pete, it was an amazing insight, because Pete actually writes songs for, you know, Nashville artists, and it was fascinating just to see how a song is made and the creative process, and it was really eye opening. It was a fascinating experience, not only, you know, talking about my military experience that day, but just seeing how, you know, the song industry, how they make songs. It was fascinating.
I think it would be kind of cool. I know I've talked to Terry Gould about this, and I kind of asked him if we could get together at some point and maybe write a new theme for Veterans Radio. I think it would be great to have you guys involved with that. I'm just so pleased with the work that you are all doing down there in Nashville, and have this opportunity to get to, you know, this event, obviously, that you went through was very traumatic for you and your comrades, and to have it in song, I think it was probably pretty cathartic for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great. It was, when I shared it with all my Army buddies, you know, it was basically just, everybody started crying, and you know, it kind of, the macho goes out the door at that point, and it's, you know, the song helps you kind of get to that exhale moment where you realize that, you know, you don't have to put up that facade anymore.
I think that's a really important point that you just brought up. You know, so many of us, our experiences are, you know, just buried in the back of our heads, and we, you know, we don't want to let them out.
And yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And even with Operation Song, it was, you know, it's not like, it's not a normal thing to, for a bunch of Army guys just to go, hey, let's, let's do this thing with this Operation Song. You know, we normally don't seek that kind of attention, but, you know, just willing to actually say, you know what, let's just see what this is about, and you know, be willing to be vulnerable and talk about stuff is a huge, huge thing that just we're really bad at and need to get better.
Well, I think organizations like Operation Song are helping many, many veterans, men and women and family members.
You bet.
It sounds like.
Yeah, and the fact that Travelers was willing to, you know, to make this happen and to put it together, and, you know, it's a Fortune 500 company. They don't have to do this. So that was, it just really went a lot to just see how much care factor there is and how much, you know, my, and other companies do it too, but obviously I work for Travelers, but just that they cared enough to do something like this and to let us have this experience. I shared feedback with the CEO that this should be required for all veterans at Travelers, and hopefully they're going to continue to support it as well, which is great.
I think that's as you mentioned, that's a great thing. There are many, many corporations out there, I think, that we're not aware of that do have, I don't know if you want to call them special programs for veterans. That's not the term I'm looking for.
Right. Yeah.
But they've but like got, you know, they've got
Travelers, to your point, Travelers gets it. They understand what a veteran is. They understand that, you know, even though we may not be career software engineers or whatever the field is that we bring tremendous amounts of leadership, and a lot of companies don't teach that anymore. Whereas the military, it's education for everything in leadership. So, you know, a lot of companies sometimes lose track of that, and thankfully Travelers doesn't.
Well, that's true. I mean, we all know that, you know, the things that we did learn in the military that we really could transfer over to the corporate life. You know, I think songs like this, and as you mentioned, what Travelers is doing really is really helping that out and just getting the word out that, you know, here are some really good employees. You know, you may want to look at those.
Yeah, it really helped with the transition as well, because when you leave that brotherhood of the military service and that regimented lifestyle, you know, there's a lot of companies out there we see in the news that, you know, in the Army, I always took care of my soldiers because I knew someday that they would do that for me and sacrifice themselves, because I would sacrifice myself. Whereas modern business, they sacrifice other people so they can survive. But Travelers isn't that company, and it's just nice to be a part of it.
Well, I think it's really great. I know Pete jumped in there a second. Did you have a comment you wanted to make about putting this together?
I know what he would tell you is that this was he's worked with Grammy award-winning artists, and I was the best person he ever worked with. And he looks forward to working with me for the rest of his career, and he can't believe what he's been missing.
There you go. Wow.
And I don't hear any objections, so I guess that's true. So,
okay. Well, you know, let's talk a little bit. My final guest for the program, we're having a little problem finding out where he is.
Yeah. And,
there he is. Right
I'm
there.
Here.
Hey, how are you?
Good there. Good to see you. It's good to
good
be
to
back.
See you too. Good to see you back on. Okay. I'm sorry. You know, with these Zoom things, I only recognize voices sometimes on the radio program and Zoom. I'm looking right at the guy. he probably kept wondering, why do you keep calling me Pete? This is the joy of live radio, folks. So disregard all the frantic messages that I've been sending you by text and so forth.
It's okay.
But I did want to kind of bring you on and you know, while I've got Dominic on there, is your organization does a very similar program with the Warrior Songs.
Well, and it's, you know, for some guys, it's song. You know, we've had things like Guitars for Vets. There's different, you know, nature. I mean, whatever it takes, I think, for soldiers, veterans to be able to sort of examine and appreciate, and as you said, you know, have a cathartic moment about an experience is not just important for them and the guys that went through it, for the rest of us to try and begin to understand. And music is one of those ways that we're able to reach people and maybe get them to listen and understand. And, you know, again, a great song. I mean, an incredible story, a powerful one. And boy, the more ears we can get to that, I think the better off we all are to be able to understand and appreciate, you know, what service is like, and how it never leaves you. I mean, that's the point, I think, that we all say, those of us who've been in, it's never gone. It's never that far away. So if it takes a lyric to be able for somebody else to appreciate that, I think that's as good as we can get.
I couldn't agree more. Dominic, feel free to jump in here, because right now I'm going to kind of transfer over here, do a crossfade into talking with Doug Bradley. And Doug is a writer. He served in Vietnam. He was at he was in Long Binh, a little bit after I was.
Oh, wow.
I didn't meet him.
We don't know him. Yeah.
There were only 50,000 people there, evidently. I didn't realize that. You know, I flew out of an area called Plantation Airfield, which was, I can't remember now. I think it was up in a northeast or west corner of the whole thing, over by the 90th replacement.
Yep.
And so, but you wrote an article that I recently that I found really interesting. It's, as many of us know, just last week was, you know, Vietnam Veterans Day. Isn't that nice? We finally got a day. Anyway, but the point is that you were talking about 50 ways to leave a quagmire. And I thought that was very clever, because some of the songs that we would listen to at the time. And when Doug was on the program before, we were talking about his book of, you know, we got to get out of this place, and the music of Vietnam. How did this just pop into your mind one day? And you say, oh, this sounds reasonable.
You know, it's funny. It does. Dale, as we were saying, you know, it's sort of in a moment you can get back to Long Binh. You can hear, maybe it's a helicopter, or it's a voice, or maybe it's a smell or a song, and you're right there. And, you know, I've been, as you know, it took a long time for there to be a National Vietnam Veterans Day. And now we're 50 years out from when the last soldiers left Vietnam, guys that came after you and me. So yeah, it's just there. It was just a prompt. You know, I was thinking about that day. I was thinking about, you know, guys I've known that I served with that are not with us anymore, and whether or not, you know, it was PTSD or Agent Orange or who knows what, and how challenging that can be. And so, yeah, I always, yeah, for me, it's the music I go back to. Again, fortunate being in the rear, having Armed Forces Radio, you know, the cover bands and the EM clubs, some of the groups that came, Bob Hope, you know, we were lucky and fortunate to have music with us to sort of, you know, either unite us or soothe us or relax us. You know, guys in the field didn't. And so we had that benefit. And so for me, it's always music, you know, that brings me back and takes me there. And as you and I have talked about before, frankly, the best music ever. I mean, it was the best of the, you know, rock and the British invasion. It was the best of Motown and R&B, and it was the best of country. And they all played together, and a lot of them were on each other's albums, you know. I mean, so, yeah, it was, thank goodness for the music, because, you know, for guys like me and some of the guys I served with and I came home with, it's sort of what's kept us going.
That's true. You know, I always tell people about, you know, as a pilot, you know, we helicopter pilots, when we weren't working, you know, company-wide missions, we went off on our own everywhere, it seemed like. And the inside of one of our radios was an ADF, what they call an automatic direction finder. And sort of a, you know, an early GPS thing. Yeah. And so we would tune in to the Saigon Armed Forces Radio and fly, in our case, because we were all in three corps area, and we could fly everywhere, and somebody would say, well, where are you? Well, I'm on the 35 degree radio off of Saigon. You know, what do you want to know? And yeah, and that was always playing in the back of our mind, and obviously not real loud, but it was always just going. And I'm sure that the door gunners and crew chiefs were the ones that were really grooving in the back while we were, you know, quote, tending to business up front.
Yeah, you're not alone with that reflection. And it's so funny because everybody says, no, wait a minute, you know, like, you know, somebody else would talk about, you know, how you get on the other radio bands, because there were secured radio frequencies only for military communication. And sometimes a pilot or, you know, a guy in the field or one of us, somebody would get on that band and, you know, they play a song or there'd be music. And it's like, how can that happen? Well, you know, it happened and it was everywhere.
That would be on guard.
Yes.
That just triggered a memory. I can remember somebody playing, you know, I forget what the song was exactly, but you know, all of a sudden on guard, we could hear this song and we're just going, uh-oh, somebody's going to be in trouble for this one. But you had to make sure you turned off the radios and, you know, there was a lot of tinkering with dials and so forth, as you were talking, from AM to FM to UHF to everything else that you could imagine was going on at the time.
Don't want to make it sound like a picnic, but you know, it's like you did what you did to get by. And if sometimes, you know, flipping a switch, or you know, you weren't putting anybody at risk, but somebody could hear, you know, Sky Pilot or Detroit City or, you know, these boots are made for walking, you know, it would give them a little lift, you know, and it made me feel a little bit better. Sort of like what Dominic's been, I mean, it's like this got him through and the guys that were with him. Other people are going to hear this and listen and maybe begin to understand and appreciate. And that's sort of what music helps us do.
It does. And I, as I mentioned so many times, the idea of what you're doing up in Wisconsin and what they're doing down in Nashville is it's so helpful. I mean, not only does it help whoever, you know, the who's given them the story, and then the, you know, these songwriters who are professionals, and I'll come in and help them put it together, and then they record it, or, you know, somebody else will record it. And I mean, it's not just for the veteran, it's for the families. It's for the, you know, the grandkids and so forth. They'll find out, you know, what grandma or grandpa really went through. And we've, you know, some of these songs are so powerful when they talk about, you know, not only the battles that some of these men and women today especially are in, but some of the battles that the families are going through because their son or daughter didn't come home.
And we talked about how, in our era, you know, we all had a shared soundtrack, whether you stayed or whether you served, whether you participated or whether you protested, we'll all listen to the same music. And now, and a lot of the music that veterans themselves put together, and we've talked about this, you and I did a whole show about this years ago, on, you know, vet musicians. And a lot of that, you know, Sarge Lincecum and others of their ilk, Martin and Holiday, you know, you would never hear that music. Now, the great thing is that songs like this that Dominic put together, it's accessible. All music is accessible to everybody. So somebody's going to find, more than one somebody's going to find that song. In the old days, if you didn't know who Martin Holiday were, and maybe weren't in Texas when they were playing at some dive, you would never know their music, you know, Time to Lay It Down, you know. But the great thing is now, we can get that song that we just heard, and others can listen to it. Like you said, families, people have no connection. People have lots of connections. So that's the beauty now, at least in terms of the accessibility of songs like this, is that we can all get it. It's there for all of us.
I think it's wonderful, and I know that I just, you know, I downloaded Dominic's song from their website. For a small donation, I was able to get the whole album that they've put out there. And, you know, it is high quality music. And, you know, I hate to say it, it's music that we could understand. You know, I every once in a while I listen to music of today and I'm going, I feel like I must be, you know, channeling my father or something, you know, because I'm going, what in the world is this? I don't understand it. I can't understand the lyrics and so forth. But these lyrics that are coming from your group, from the Warrior Songs and from the Operation Song, are very deeply emotional. And you know, you can feel the pain. You can feel the joy. And it's mostly, most of the songs actually have some sort of a country leaning to them, sort of. I guess, you know, because that's, country music has always been great storytelling music anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it was, when you look back early, like on the early Vietnam soundtrack, any references or relation to war, not about politics, not about division, but just about service and sacrifice, was country music. You know, Dear Uncle Sam and Distant Drums by Jim Reed. I mean, it's just, you know, they knew it, they got it because it was part of how they lived and who they were. And if you look at enlistments in the military over the course of time, you're going to find more people from those parts of the country than you are maybe from, you know, Philadelphia or Pittsburgh, where I was born and went to high school. You know, it's just part of the nature of service. And so, yeah, I think, you know, it's always been there. And it has always, again, politics notwithstanding, it's been about what it takes to serve, what the sacrifice is, what, you know, what you're participating in, who you are, where you're from. And that's indelible with the music. And now, of course, it's become so ubiquitous. I mean, I was looking at a thing the other day about the Everly Brothers and their sound and how critical they were to rock and roll. I mean, they were country singers. They grew up singing with their parents on country radio shows down in Texas when they were growing up. But that music is our music, and it belongs to all of us, and it sort of helped to transform the landscape. And you have all that going on now, back and forth, I think.
Yeah, we do. It's a great healer. It certainly is a great healer. I wanted to just kind of go back to your article, which was called 50 Ways to Leave a Quagmire. How we were 50 years ago, everybody was trying to figure out how to get out of Vietnam. And so you have a couple of quotes here, which I think are really interesting. One was, quoted by McNamara, you know, says, call off the attack. Let's see, Walt Rostow says, it ain't their fault. LBJ says, no need for you to stay. So we stayed. And then we stayed. And then we stayed some more. I don't know. Everybody came in with their secret plans to get us out. And it was a quagmire. And you know, there was no easy way to get out of that situation.
No. And it challenged, like I said in the article, five presidents. You know, I mean, Truman started off by supporting the French, you know, and giving them some air support and some, you know, some military support. And it's like nobody wanted to lose anything. You know, we're Americans. We had just saved the world in many ways with the help of the Allies. And so if communism was what we needed to stop, we were going to, you know, we could not stop it. We couldn't lose. And what we didn't it's just the things we didn't understand about Vietnam in terms of, you know, what the Civil War was about and who was doing what with whom and what had happened with the French and the Japanese and the Chinese before us. And that's really part of the sad thing, because by the time we knew that, we still didn't get out because we didn't want to look like the president that had lost a war.
Right. Yeah. So we had 58,000 names on a wall somewhere. And I was thinking about that just this morning. I'm going, that's 58,000 names. That's probably, you know, that's 116 possible relative, you know, how many relatives are involved in that number and how many potential children, grandchildren, everything else that are gone for that. And that's what war does. And it's so disturbing and so disgusting. You know, there never is a good war.
I'm with you on that, brother. And, you know, I mean, I even remember talking to some World War II vets, and it's like, you know, I mean, they knew they saved the world, but I mean, it never leaves them. I mean, it's always difficult, and it's never ends. You know, they say in war, there are no unwounded soldiers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is always there. I mean, if it wasn't always there, there wouldn't be all these organizations out there. There wouldn't be people like Operation Song or, you know, Warriors Songs. People, it just seems like it takes your whole life to work your way through it. It's not that you don't accept it. It's just that it was there, and it's a major part of your life every day. And then you have all of these days that come up and to remind you of it, you know, whether it's Vietnam Veterans Day or Memorial Day or Veterans Day or this one or that one. And, you know, every time you go past a flag, almost, it seems like it, you think of somebody.
Yep. No, that's right. You're absolutely. And I think, again, that's what music can do for us. Sure, they can be painful reminders, but there can also be like you said, the healing ones. And if we can heal some more hearts, help bring some people home that way, soothe their families, you know, support their efforts. That's what we need to do. That's, you know, why do we do this? We put people in harm's way for some reason, you know, and, yeah. You know, we need to take care of them and take care of, and support them when they get back home. And I think music is a great way for us to communicate that, to understand it, appreciate it, and also maybe, like I said, to heal a person or two.
Well, Doug Bradley, thank you very much for being on the program again today. And let us know when you've got another book out there. And we'd love to have you back on the program. Thank you very much. I encourage everybody to go to Operation Song or go to the Warrior Songs also. Check out what's available to you. So we listen to those today. Next week is Easter, and we're going to have a special program on chaplains. Next week it'll be recorded since it is Easter Day or Easter Sunday. And so I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio. Until next week, this is Dale Thornberry. You are dismissed.